Hello, I'm Alice Murray, editor of The Drawdown, and today we're asking if reporting still needs to be standardised. Over the past decade, attempts to standardise private equity reporting have come on in leaps and bounds, most notably with the ILPA template, as well as Invest Europe's guidelines having gained much ground. However, we are by no means there yet. GPs and LPs continue to be misaligned when it comes to information sharing. But is standardisation the cure? Or has technology advanced to a point where information can be produced in any format and digested however needed? To explore this interesting question, Mike Dickey of MUFG Investor Services and myself will be quizzing an LP who comes in the shape of Hamish Mair of BMO Global Asset Management. So Hamish, I'll kick us off with the first question. Given your position as a fund of funds manager, you get to see both sides of the coin here, receiving data from GPs as well as distributing that to your LPs. So what's your take on how we've gotten to where we are in terms of reporting?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the data problem goes back a long, long way. I mean, private equity as an asset class, developed in the sort of 70s and 80s in the US and the UK. And, that was in an age where, personal computers and that sort of thing were just not available. And, the clue is in the name, private equity, dissemination of information widely is not normal in private equity. Keeping information proprietary into oneself and limiting it to those who are in the know, if you like, is what private equity is all about. And but the asset class is now quite large, as billions or trillions of dollars assets under management, and it's in so many portfolios that it's become essential that people can actually get that data in reasonably consistent formats. And, from when I first started in private equity back in the early 90s, I mean, it was all very, very manual. I mean, you basically got sent a report, hard copy, which you would then have to copy out. You didn't even have Excel spreadsheets then. It was very much a sort of hand cranking exercise. I mean, it wasn't so long before that in our industry, in the investment trust industry, we still had people operating with big sort of ledgers and kind of, copper plate handwriting and that sort of stuff. I do remember that, the tail end of that, before we went to computerized systems. And I'm only 54, so it's not that long ago. Things have sort of moved on hugely, and particularly in the last few years, you've got a number of, platforms and investor platforms that can be used. And, there are computer systems that are bespoke for private equity. And those have even radically improved in the last decade or so. Mm-hmm. But that's not the total solution. That's a partial solution. And I think, as a general observation, you're always going to have some firms that are very good at this and good at getting the information out in a kind of highly usable, investor-friendly format. And they're also willing to disseminate information freely amongst their investors. And then you'll have others, who are not so good at it. And they're the sort of laggards and have to be dragged sort of kicking and screaming to use these systems. And, sadly, I think you're always going to have early adopters and laggards. And I think the aim really should be for us to, try and get the bar raised so that the minimum standard is a lot better than the sort of worst that we see at the moment. Mm. I mean, these are a couple of bits of background. The need for sort of hand cranking of data was probably not going to ever go completely, but you can certainly reduce it. And by doing that, you essentially free up the time and effort of highly qualified professionals to actually analyze the data rather than create the data. And then from analyzing that data, they can draw conclusions, which can then feed into their investment process, which can improve decision making. In other words, make the market more efficient. Mm-hmm. And it's never going to be completely efficient. And in fact, private equity investors do not want things to become completely efficient, because the inefficiencies and the asymmetry of information flows is what gives, you know, diligent, hardworking private equity investors an advantage over others. Mm-hmm. The fact that you can find out something that somebody else doesn't know or hasn't worked out gives you an advantage in a way which is impossible in the public markets, where by definition, everybody has access to the same information.
So Hamish, what would you say is your biggest challenge at the moment when it comes to data?
The things that we find most difficult are, collating fundamental data on underlying companies in private equity. So if I have a portfolio of 40 companies, it's something like, what is the average size of these companies? You know, what's the average enterprise value of each of these companies? You know, that is not that easy to find out, you know, unless various fields have been entered into the system. And then, you know, what is the profits growth in any given period of time for these companies? Now, you can't get that unless it's the same measure of profitability has been inputted into, 40 different, inputted 40 times into the same field, 80 times, in fact, because you need the start point and the end point. And so, that's 80 different bits of data entry, which, quite possibly have to be derived from somebody sitting there and reading a PDF and then copying down the number or cutting and pasting a number. And the problem, apart from the sort of labor intensivity of it, the scope for error is quite high. So any system, even if you had the most sort of brilliant system that was a kind of nothing, there was no human intervention between, somebody producing the data at the GP and it going all the way through into, our system and then putting it in our format, it would still require checking and oversight, because the consequences of an innocent mistake are quite serious. Somebody could miss out a decimal point or, digit is not copied over, and an investment that's supposed to be worth 20 million is now worth 2 million. And, the investment manager would even query that, but the IT guy or the accountant or whatever might not. Mm-hmm. You might think, oh, well, that's obviously a bad quarter for that one. Oh, yeah. In actual fact, it's a manifest error.
Are there any value add data processing activities that, if automation replaced it, you think, you guys, your firm would lose value? You've talked about, the inputting of the data from a financial statement. If that could all, be far more automated, are there, that process probably is actually one you'd like to see go away. But are there any manual processes that you do today that actually you think create value, in beyond the review of data itself?
Yeah, that's a good question. We've kind of hinted at this. I mean, some manual entry of data, if you like, or, that data is being reviewed as it goes in, and the person that's doing it, if they're sufficiently well trained, will be reviewing this. But there's probably a kind of diminishing curve there where, if you have to put in 10 bits, if you have to review 10 critical pieces of information and compare and contrast, you that's probably something that a human can do quite well, and a skilled human would be able to draw conclusions quite quickly from that. If he's having to do 150, his processing power and his reflective ability, etc., is probably going to be, much, much less than doing a small number. So, you could say if you've actually only got a few data points to look at, you're probably better the human doing it than the computer. I mean, it's the same as everything. It's like DNA sequencing. Originally when that was being done, they'd be looking at very limited bits of DNA and probably scientists could do it to some extent manually, but to do the whole human genome is completely impossible for any human to do. I mean, it's just physically not possible.
So, I mean,
that's a good analogy.
Well, I mean, it's representative, I guess. I mean, you know, for us, we are trying to automate every single process that we can to remove that manual aspect of it. Because I guess to your point, you know, learning it is important, but, you know, if you're repeating it over and over again, you're probably not learning anything further on that. So no, it's interesting to hear that thought.
Yeah, and there's a safety thing, I suppose. You know, if your computer system fails, then do you have any kind of fallback? Can some of these things actually be done manually? I mean, our answer probably is you've got a pretty serious problem that probably can't be done manually very easily. But I mean, we used to do these things manually, so I think we probably could in extremis. But maybe not everybody could now if they're totally reliant on their, you know, computer to do it all for them. I mean, things have improved hugely. I mean, the advent of specific private equity platforms, the way information is transmitted to us. Okay, you know, we still do get PDFs. I mean, that's kind of normal. And there still requires to be a kind of manual intervention to put that into our system. We use eFront. You know, I think companies like that are trying to create a sort of, ecosystem where things go from the companies to the GP to the LP, you know, as seamlessly as possible and as quickly as quickly. Through the cloud's helping a lot there, an end-to-end cloud system can enable that. But we're still quite a long way away from a fully standardized system, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, data, at least as I see it in the industry, is still a huge problem. Like you say, I mean, we're struggling to move away from sending Excel files and PDFs around to each other. And I think part of that is because we can't agree a taxonomy on data, and to your earlier point, maybe we don't want to. I think you touched on the data transmission piece, which I think is extremely challenging for LPs, GPs, and administrators. I mean, I think for us, it's driven what doesn't need to be a manual process to have automation, but with manual interventions in between, which just at times can lead to more bodies and certainly less scale. And I guess it must be raising costs for you.
If the data systems were better, I mean, that would be, you know, we would take out cost. And, I think the appetite for people to sort of invest in systems that can remove the sort of manual labor aspect, or the sort of human aspect, the huge demand for that. I mean, we spend a huge amount of our time reporting to our, and preparing reports, which involves us receiving reports, condensing them down, summarizing them, and then reporting to our own investors. And we're just in the middle of that, actually, sort of year-end mm-hmm. reporting. I mean, it's several man weeks. Just to get the reports out, and these are expensive people. You know, they're not sort of clerks. You know, these are proper investment professionals. And I mean, they're always complaining that they'd much rather be doing. I mean, they'd much rather just be spending all the time doing deals rather than actually doing any reporting. And part of me agrees with them, but part of me says, well, actually, but there is a discipline. You actually do have to be able to report back to your investors, and you need to reflect on the success or otherwise of what we've done for them. And there is an unavoidable element of reflection and analysis of that, but that's quite different from the physical hand cranking, if you like, or semi hand cranking that is required to put things together.
I guess with those problems, I guess for us, we're seeing a lot of the GPs that we work with, as well as the LPs. There's a lot more. There's been an increase in side letters, and even though mm-hmm. transparency and reporting's improved, it doesn't seem like that growth is abating. And, you know, that's just kind of creating more work on top of more work for us, for our clients, for everyone. I mean, what's your experience then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, sometimes we will ask for side letters. That's normally where, it's normally where the GP is probably sort of a bit behind the curve in terms of their own reporting. And it's, you know, it's well below what we would regard as a minimum standard. We've got one of these Italian funds where, you know, they're actually very good investors, but they're not very good at reporting. And so we've had to put a side letter in place to say something basic, like, you know, you do actually have to do a proper valuation every 3 months, not some lower of cost and net realizable value report every 6 months, which is what they were proposing to do. I mean, that's not very useful to us. So, but I'd say that's the exception. I mean, sometimes it's necessary to put in a side letter in to, you know, focus on reporting, particularly in the States. Actually, we find that the kind of variability there in terms of the standards, somewhat ironically, because it's a big market, it's been going for a long time and it's got lots of sensible participants, but sometimes we have to get them to, you know, have to spell it out to them. I mean, frequently we'll put this stuff into the LPA, which means that everybody benefits from it, rather than a sort of dozen different side letters. And I think from a GP's point of view, that's probably much preferable, that they're producing one report that meets the needs of all their investors, rather than one report and then lots of little sort of sub reports for the sort of individual foibles of each of their investors. That's an administrative nightmare, as I think you're probably alluding to, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, even for our clients who have what I would deem pretty good reporting, they're still getting those requests. So it's interesting to see what's driving that. I mean, we've seen.
Well, the whole side letter industry. I mean, sometimes, you know, you will get, depending on who you use as your lawyer that's reviewing the documentation, some of them have a tendency to, draft a side letter as a first resort, rather than, you know, in my view, read the LPA properly and then possibly suggest an amendment to the LPA. I mean, I'm being slightly facetious, but actually you do see that. I mean, I don't know if you've ever reviewed the list of side letters that a large fund would have, because normally what they'll do is if we invest in a fund, they then they will say, here is the list of side letters. Would you like the benefit of any of these side letters? And I'm not joking, you can have sort of like 100 different side letters. And some of them are related to the most sort of, you know, obscure aspects, or, you know, stuff that is completely and utterly irrelevant to you. And also a significant proportion of them are asking for things that are already incorporated within the LPA, which leads one to the obvious conclusion, did the people that reviewed this for you, did they actually read the LPA? and we see that all the time. And it's quite normal for us to read through these lists of side letters and say, you know, out of 100 side letters, you might say there's only two of them that we'd actually like the benefit of. So there's a bit of a side letter industry. And it's obviously making your life difficult as well.
certainly. We've seen a lot of changes, I guess, in technology in the last couple of years, and you referenced it earlier. I mean, we've kind of pivoted our focuses to trying to automate a lot of those processes around, you know, scraping PDFs and machine learning. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you seen big take up in that in your business?
Yeah, no, I was just talking to our guys earlier about this and saying, you know, when the PDFs come in, you know, and you're extracting the numbers from them and it's going into the eFront system, I mean, that's still a manual process. That doesn't happen. We don't seem to be able to do it without a human intervening there. Obviously, they sort of copy and paste the numbers in or whatever they do. It doesn't happen automatically. So sense that your sort of scraping process might be better, provided it's, you know, provided it's kind of accurate, you know, it's not, you're not missing something.
We've invested a lot of time, and this is given the size of our client base that, you know, our, you know, LPs and fund funds, it's been a, you know, a huge squeeze on us as far as, you know, we're not a firm that's looking to offshore. So we've really invested in scaling through tech. And I guess for us, we started really trying to solve that problem like 3 or 4 years ago. And kind of took really a platform view and trying to, you know, all right, track that piece of information from the time it enters our process to the time that payment settles, and or from that time that valuation comes in to the time we post it, so that we've got, you know, basically almost a conveyor belt of how that information is coming into our universe. One of the key components for that, which gave us huge efficiency, was being able to extract that data off the PDFs and map it to our GL system. And on top of that, you know, we're looking things at unfunded commitments, wire instructions, all of those things that are then going through, you know, 25 validations before it's pushed downstream. So, I mean, for us, we've been trying to solve that problem because, I guess, as an industry, we haven't really dealt with it. For us, it's created a competitive advantage, but I don't know how much that's helped the broader industry in tackling the problem, so to speak.
I mean, there have been some developments which, you know, intuitively you think would be a good thing, but actually do make the process slightly more manual. So, for example, you know, the use of data rooms for, reporting and also for, you know, drawdowns and distributions, you know, that does make life quite a bit easier for GPs because they can get the information out in a very sort of timely fashion, and you know, they don't have to do as much in terms of, you know, sending out, you know, dozens of emails with attachments, which probably involves scope for error. But as a consumer, it does introduce an extra process for us because we then have to go into the data room, plug in the password, open the stuff up, you know, rather than having received it directly. So, you know, you think it's a step forward, but in some ways it does actually introduce an extra step into the process.
Indeed. And this seems to be the catch-22 situation we find ourselves in right across the reporting spectrum, whether it's new technology, guidelines, templates. While new solutions might be increasing efficiencies in one area, they appear to be causing more work or intricacies in another. So on that slightly pessimistic note, this is where we're going to leave the conversation for today. Thank you both so much for your time and fascinating insights. And join us for episode 2, where we will be digging even deeper into the standardization versus tech debate.